We're up to Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're going to count down two lines. The second line of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Mi Iko. So that's on the at the end of the second line. Do you have it? Mi Iko. Now we just finished saying in the name of Rav Masna that in the cases where one of the two, either the Ani or the Baal Bais, did the entire Malacha, Bishlemus, the other one, even though the Mishnah says he's Patur, he was totally passive, and therefore Patur means Patur Mutter. So Gemara asks, Umika Bakuli Shabbos, do we find anywhere in Masechta Shabbos that the word Patur means Mutter? V'amar Shmuel kol p'turei Shabbos. Whenever it says anywhere in Masechta Shabbos the word patur, it means patur aval aser. It means that even though on a d'oraisa level you're patur, you didn't technically implement the malacha, but nevertheless aval aser mid'rabbanan they asked it. So that's what the word patur means. So we have three terms in Masechta Shabbos. We have chayev, which means yichayev chatos. We have patur, which means that's patur aval aser. And then we have something called mutter. Aval Aser, but it means even though it's Potter, it's Aser. It's Potter Midaraisa, no Chiv Chatos, but it's Aser Midarabonin. Bar Mihani Klas, with the exception of the following three cases, which are Potter Umutter.
So that will be?
We're now on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're on line 4. Now, amongst the three exceptions, basically what we're going to happen, what we're going to have is what's called b'makom tsar lo gozu be'rabbanon, that if a person is suffering, so the rabbanon will, under certain circumstances, alleviate the iser, which normally would be osur min rabbanon. For example, the first case on the list is sedas tzvi. The second case on the list is sedas nochal, and the third case on the list is mafis mursa. Now, let's take the first case, Tzedas Tzvi. You have a deer that entered into your house, and the Tzvi, this deer, cannot exit. And in this case, if let's say one person would sit on the opening and close the opening of this door of this house, then he's chayev from Meleches Tzeda. Why? Because as a result of the fact that he's closing off the escape path of this deer, that means he's capturing the deer. Now, if on the other hand, someone comes and stands behind him, so you have Reuven who's now closing the Pesach, and you have Shimon who's behind him on the outside, and Shimon therefore is not doing a Meleches Tzedah, what happens now if Reuven packs out? And now it turns out that Shimon is standing in the place, not letting the Tzvi exit. He's now responsible for Meleches Tzedah. So Shmuel says that in this case, which is a sugya later on in Masechta Shabbos on Daf Kuf Vav, Shimon, the second guy, is Potter Umutter. There's nothing wrong, there's no even violation of the Rabbanim for him to stay, remain where he is, because he was totally passive. He did not do anything active to capture the Tzvi. The second case is Tzedas Nochash. Here's a case where you have a serpent, and he's afraid that the serpent might bite him. So what he's allowed to do is, he's allowed to, let's say, push the Nochash away, in a certain situation which normally would be asur. In other words, he's kind of like capturing the nachash. Again, we're not talking about a pikuach nefesh situation where he might die, because then you're allowed to do any malacha. And that's called v'chaybohem. But we're talking about a case where obviously it's going to be a great nuisance and a great pain to have this serpent around. So he's allowed to capture the serpent. Now, in this case, what you have to know is a principle, which we don't have time to discuss now, but you may want to make a note of it, and that's called a malacha she'natzricha l'gufa. What I mean is that if you were a zookeeper, that you'd want to capture a serpent in order to take it into your zoo. But here he's not interested, he's not a zookeeper, he's just trying to protect himself. So the malacha in the Mikdash of Tzeda was done for the sake of the tchashim, of the skins, the hides. Here, he's not interested in the hides. He's not interested in capturing and taking the serpent. So that's called a malach shein tzrich legufa, which is potter aval asur. But in this case, because he's afraid that it might bite him, so the Rabbanan waved the Issa to Rabbanan, and it's mutter even lechatchila. And the third case here is called mafis mursa. Mafis mursa means he has a boil, and it's full of pus, and it's really blocked up, and it's bothering him a lot. So normally, when you take out a pus, and you sort of open the boil, that's called meleches pesach. Pesach means you're making an opening in the body. And this may come as a surprise to some of you, but if you make an opening in the body, that's called meleches bona. That's actually building. Like it says, vayiven es hatzela, that there is building in the human body. But here in this case, he's not interested in opening the Pesach and making an opening in his body. He's only interested in getting out the Mursa. So that comes under a different halacha. Reb Chaim in Brisk had a lot of Torah about this, called a Dover She'eino Miskaven. And we pass like Reb Shimon that a Dover She'eino Miskaven is Potter. But it should have been Asur mid Rabbanon, but because he's suffering so with this boil, they allowed him, even lechatchila, it was potur mutter, to do this act of puncturing that boil in such a way that the lecha, the pus within it, would come out. There's no isa drabanan. However, there's no fourth case, according to Shmuel. And the question is, when we go back to our Mishnah, and our Mishnah says, in all the cases where there's a chiyuv chatos, where the ani did a complete malacha, and he put the object down in the hands of the balabais, or the opposite, the balabais did a complete malacha, and he left the object down, put the object down in the hands of the ani. In all these cases, the Mishnah says that the ani is going to be chayev, or the osh is going to be chayev, and the other one is going to be potter. And now he's saying that since he's totally passive, potter means potter and mutter. He doesn't violate any iser. So why isn't this listed among Shmuel's exceptions to the rule that wherever it says potter, the Mishnah, with the exception of these three cases, it means potter and mutter? Now we have a fourth exception to the rule. Why didn't Shmuel mention that? So Gemara answers that kiyat tzrich leil Shmuel. When did Shmuel need to teach me that the word potter means potter muta? That's pturi deka avid maisa. That's only in a case where he did a violation of a malacha actively. But pturi deloka avid maisa, in the case where it's potter because he was totally passive, he did nothing. Ika tuva. There are many examples of this. And therefore, Shmuel did not feel compelled to mention all those examples. He wanted to be mechadish a chiddush that in these cases, even though he violates a malacha, not on a doraisa level, because technically he's potter for whatever reason, as we discussed, he should be in violation of an isur d'rabbanan because he actively captured the deer or captured the serpent or he punctured the boil and removed the lecha. But nevertheless, here potter means that the rabbanan allowed him to do it, and it's potter mutter. The only problem we have here, but that's not for us today, that's for more in-depth shiur, is the case of Tzedas Tzvi. Because if you remember, Shimon came along and he stood there behind Reuven, and Reuven left. And when Reuven checked out, Shimon was totally passive. So why did I need Shmuel to tell me that in that case, potu means potu muta? So that's a long discussion in the Mefarshim. Okay, now that we figured out that in our Mishnah, in the Reish of our Mishnah, when it's Shtayim, which means two violations of a Malacha Doraisa on the part of the Ani, and another Shtayim, two violations on the part of the Baal Habayis, in which both the Ani and the Ashir, the Baal Habayis, are Chayav, because they did the entire Malacha, and the Potter means for the other participant, he's passive, it's Mutter. Then we get to the Shein Arba, V'Shein Arba. We have the two cases where the Ani started the Malacha and the Ashir completed the Malacha, or vice versa, where the Baal Bayis began the Malacha and the Ani completed the Malacha. So the Gemara says, Mikomakom Tarte Yisrei Havyon. Since the last two cases on both sides have two participants, so therefore we multiply two by two and two by two. So we're going to end up now with eight cases in which there's a partnership between the Ani and the Baal Bayis. Zeh Oker v'zeh Miniach. And if we add those eight to the four cases that are Doraisa, then we end up with the number 12. And our Mishnah actually has only eight. So we never answered this question. Now the Gemara is swinging back to answer this question. Why is the Mishnah satisfied with a cap of eight when really there are not only eight, but there are 12, because we have to add four other cases in which there's a second participant? So now what the Gemara is going to do, by way of introduction, is the Gemara is going to set up two different categories of a Ptur Derabbanan, meaning that even when it's two participants in a Meleches Hotzah, one did the Akira, the other did the Hanocha, nevertheless one is more, shall I say, significant than the other. And that's called, in the Gemara's language, if you take a look here, Pture di Asi Bahu Lidei Chiyuv Chatas. That there's a case of a Ptur, and this is the case where the Mishnah will consider it as part of the calculation, that could come to an Isur Chatas. So Rashi has his interpretation, and Tosfos has his interpretation. Rashi says that when the Gemara says Pture di Asi Bahu Lidei Chiyuv Chatas Kachoshim, Kachoshim means it's considered part of the calculation of Shtein Shein Arba, whereas the lo asi behuli dechi of chatas, if it cannot come to a full malacha, lo kachosh, if it's not calculated, Rashi learns that the Mishnah is only interested in the oker, the one who lifted up the object. So for example, if the ani lifts up the object in Rishus HaRabim, stretches his arm out into Rishus HaYochidin, the Baal Bayis takes it actively out of his hand and does the anocha, the Ani will be calculated in the Mishnah, and the Usher will not be calculated in the Mishnah, even though both of them, in fact, violate an Isur Derabbanan, Zeh Oker v'Zeh Miniach, but only the Akiros are calculated, because the Akira has a special status over here. It's Asi Lidei Chiyuv Chatos. The Akira starts the Malacha, and had he completed the Malacha with Hanocha, he would be Chayv Chatos. The Miniach, on the other hand, could not generate a Chiyuv Chatos, no way, no how, because Hanocha, when he didn't do the Akira, is missing the essential part of Hotzah. That's Rashi's Shita. Tosfos doesn't like this Shita, and Tosfos thinks that the Asi Bahu Lidei Chiyuv Chatos here is the Meiniach. He's the one who's calculated in the Mishnah. Why? Because he really completes the Malach itself. The Rashba is a third Shita in understanding Asi Bahu Lidei Chiyuv Chatos, and he thinks that Asi Lidei Chiyuv Chatos is the person who has an object in his hand and he stretches his hand out. So if the Ani, for example, is carrying an object and he stretches his hand into Rishus HaYochid, he will be calculated. If the Baal Bayis, on the other hand, has an object in his hand in Rishus HaYochid and he stretches out his hand, he will be calculated, because the person who takes something in his hand, he's the one who's doing what we called, if you remember on the blackboard here yesterday, we called it Shinui Rishus. He's the one who's taking the object over the boundary line from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, or vice versa. So it turns out that, for example, according to the Rashba, let's say the Ani picks up the object in Rishus HaRabim, he puts it into the outstretched hand of the Baal Bayis. The Baal Bayis now pulls his hand in. So the Ani did the Akira, the Baal Bayis did the Hanocha. The Rashba will say in such a case, it's the Baal Bayis who's calculated in the eight, in the number eight in the Mishnah, because he did what's called the main Iker Chatos. He did the main Iser Malacha, because he pulled his hand in with an object, and therefore he did the Shini Rishus. Now the Gemara asks a fundamental question. Shneim Pturim, in the cases, right, the cases that we have, the four cases of Zeh Oker v'Zeh Miniach, where they participate together in a Malacha, this one does the Akira, this one does the Anocha, Shneim Pturim. Is it really true logically that both should be Potur? Vois Avida Melacha Mibeinayhu. Between the two of them, they did a Melacha. This one couldn't do the Melacha himself, he could only do the Akira. This one couldn't do the Melacha himself, he could only do the Hanocha. So they needed each other and they were working in cahoots. And therefore, together, they did a Melacha. They moved the object from one Rishus to the other. So on this question, the Gemara, we have a whole shiur. It's not for today. If anyone's interested, you could join my my WhatsApp group, or you can get my drive. You can get into my drive and see all my shiurim on Masechta Shabbos. In any event, we have a whole shiur. This Gemara makes no sense at first glance, because if, let's say, you have a kezias of basa treifa on the table, and Reuven would eat half the kezias, and Shimon would eat the other half of kezias, there's no havamina that Reuven and Shimon would both be chayav. Why is it that if one person does half of the malacha, the other does the other half of the malacha, the Gemara thinks, if not for a pasuk, that they should both be chayav? Although, I have to tell you, Tosus thinks that not, the Gemara doesn't think that both should be chayav, but rather the Gemara thinks that the meniach should be chayav, because he's the one who completes the malacha. But Rashi and other Rishonim hold that the Gemara thinks that both of them should be chayav. The Oker should be chayav because he's working in cahoots with the meniach, and the meniach completes the malacha, he also should be chayav. And this has to do with a famous sugya which appears all over the place in Shas, called Zeina Yochel V'Zeina Yochel. When two people, let's say, carry something very heavy, and it's too heavy for one of them, they need both together, so it could be that both of them are chayev. So the Gemara thinks that we need a special pasuk to teach us that they're both potur. Tanya, Rebbe Omer, we have a brayso to the name of Rebbe. This is the parasha of Karban Chatos in Vayikra Dalet. I'll read the entire pasuk. It says, V'yim nefesh achas techata bishkaga, me'am ha'aretz basol sa, achas mitzvos Hashem asher lo te'asena ve'evi karbono. So you have to emphasize the word be'asosa, when he did it. The mapik hey means he did the complete malacha. Says Rebbe, what do we derive from this word be'asosa? Ho says, kula, if he did the entire malacha from A to Z, then he's chayav a karbon. Velo, to the exclusion of the case of ho'osa es miktsasa, if he only did part of the malacha. Therefore, the conclusion is, yachid v'asosa, if you have one person and he implemented the entire malacha from A to Z, then chayav. But shnayim sha'asosa, if you have two people together, this one began the malachas hotzah with an akira, the other one completed the malachas hotzah with hanocha, pturim, they're both potter from chatas. It marnami, and we also have learned this in the Beis Medrash, Omer Rabchia Bar Gamda. Rabchia Bar Gamda, have you ever heard of Rabchia Bar Gamda? No. Okay. He was a great lover of Eretz Yisrael. So I mentioned it here in Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh. The Gemara at the end of Ksubis says that when he got to Eretz Yisrael, he got off his donkey and he kissed the ground. And that's the minhag that, if I don't know if you've ever seen it, I've seen it, I've done it myself. You kiss the ground when you come to Eretz Yisrael. So in any event, Rav Chiya Bar Gamda says the following, Nizrika mipiach habura. The phrase Nizrika mipiach habura, which literally means it was thrown out amongst the Chabur, means that it was a unanimous decision amongst all the Tanoim, the Amru, and they all said, Bepe Echad, with one unanimous voice, Basosa. The Torah went out of its way to say, you did the Malacha, or you did the Avera, that's Yachid Shasai Chayav. If one person himself did the entire Malacha, then he's Chayav, but Shnayim Shasu, if two together did it, Pturim, they are potter because neither of them completed the entire malacha. What was the hava mina? That's a very challenging question.
They're potter, but also it's potter, but also.
Correct. In these two cases, they both did an active participation. One, the akira, the other, anoch. They're both calculated in our Mishnah because they were active and they violated a ptur. However, the Gemara says if you're going to calculate both of them together, then you're going to end up with eight situations of a violation of Issa Drabbana. We're going to add that to the four, and then we end up with 12, and our Mishnah only has 8 and not 12, and the answer is Asi Lidei Chiyuv Chatos. We're only going to count those in the calculation of our Mishnah that could come to a Chiyuv Chatos. We'll go with Rashi's Pshat, that's only the Akira, and that's why we only have 4 Drabbanans, but in truth, there are not 4 Drabbanans, there are 8 Drabbanans, but only 4 of the 8 are calculated in the Mishnah. Boy, mine Rav mi Rebbe. Rav was a Talmud of Rebbe, and he asked Rebbe the following question. It ino chavero ochlinu mashkim. So Reuven takes a sack of food and drink, and he puts it. It ino means he places it on the shoulders of Shimon. Va'otzion lechutz. Now Shimon is out there. I'm sorry. Shimon is in Rishus HaYochid. Now Reuven has put something on his back. So who did the Akira here, Rabosai? Reuven did the Akira. And Shimon has now a knapsack on his back. The Mefarshim explained it doesn't have to be Ochlin Umashkin, just that was a little bit more common, but any object that he puts on the back of Shimon. And now Shimon Otzion Lechutz. Shimon now takes a walk from Rishus HaYochid out into Rishus HaRabin. Mahu. What's the din? Ostensibly, we would say in this case that Shimon should be potter because he didn't do the Akira. It was Reuven who did the Akira. So the Gemara now analyzes the Sofik. Akiras gufo kakiras chefetz vimkomo domi umachayev odilma lo. The Gemara says that perhaps when Shimon moves his body and he has an object over, on top of his body, then we consider the Akira of his body to be an Akira on the object that's on his body. So a person moves his body, what is he moving? He's moving his naked body, he's moving everything that's attached to his body. And that's called an Akira. So basically what Reuven did was, he did an Akira, picking up the object, the Ochlin Umashkin, he places it on the shoulders of Shimon. At that point the object is Nach, it's in a state of Menucha. And now, it's Shimon, when he moves his body, his Akira on his body is now considered an Akira on the Chefetz Umechayv, O Dilma, perhaps Lo. This is not an Akira on the object. In other words, the Malach of Hotzah means that I have to start the Hotzah by doing an Akira with my hand, picking up the object. Here he didn't pick up the object, it was Reuven who picked up the object. And although indirectly he takes the object from one place to another, but he didn't do a direct maisa, a direct act of Akira on the object. He just moved his body. So is moving the body considered like moving the object that's on his body or not? And that's where Rebbe has to answer this question. Rav himself vacillated about this question. Now, Rabosei, just a historical fact here as we go through this Gemara. Rebbe, at this point in time, was learning a different Masechta. He was not learning Masechta Shabbos. And Rav assumed that, you know what, the Gemara says that who's a true Talmud Chacham? The gauge or the barometer to judge a Talmud Chacham is someone you can ask him anywhere in Shas, and he'll always give you an answer. Right? This is his 15th time going through Shas. Right? He did seven, said he's about 120 years old, and he's gone through Shas seven times. Right? So this is what Rav assumed. You'll soon see that Rav Chiya criticized Rav a little bit for asking this question to Rebbe when Rebbe was learning a different Masechta. So Rebbe answered Rav's question, and he said that Akiras Gufo is considered Akiras Chefetz will be Chayav. And Rebbe is going to tell us that we're going to learn this from our Mishnah itself. What does that mean? So Rebbe says to Rav, Chayav. He's Chayav Achatos. Why? Because he moved his Guf. Now let's take a look for a moment at our Mishnah, and then we'll understand the next three words in the Gemara in Adom Eliyada. In the Mishnah, if you remember, one of the cases that we had, which was Derabbanan, where there was a partnership, was where the Baal HaBayis puts the object into the hands of the Ani. So the Ani stretches an empty hand into the Rishus HaYachid. The Baal HaBayis puts an object into the hand of the Ani, and the Ani pulls his hand out. And guess what? The Mishnah says that they're both potter. I understand why the Baal HaBayis is potter in this case. All he did was an Akira. You can't say that he's chay from Lech Sotzov with an Akira alone. But what about the Ani? The Ani should be chay. Why? Because he also did an Akira. Why? Because Akira's Yado, Kakira's Gufo Dami. Rebbe is perplexed by our Mishnah. Because how could Rebbe say that Akira's Gufo, Akira's Chefetz Domi? Therefore he's Chayav when our Mishnah says that if you pull your hand, that's not considered an Akira. Well, why isn't that considered an Akira? He's being Oker is Yad. The chefetz is in his yad. When he's oker his yad, it's like being oker the goof with the case of ochel u'mashkin, and that's called an akir on the chefetz. Says Rebbe v'eino dom el yado, but we shouldn't equate the cases of gufo and yado. When a person moves his body and he has objects that are laying on the back of his on his back, that's called akiras chefetz dami. By moving his body, he's moving everything that's attached to his body, but not in the case of yado. Why? Gufo nayich, his body is standing on the karka, in a stationary position on the karka, and then when he does an akira and he moves his body, when he takes his first step, so he's moving the object which is also munach al gabi karka, even though physically the object is not on the ground, it's on his back, but we view it as being part of his body, and his body is on the ground, his body is in a state of nach. And therefore, when he moves his body, he's doing an akira on both his body and on the object that's sitting on his back. But yado lo nayich, the yad is not considered munach al gabi karka. Now here we have a machlokas rishonim. I'll just mention it quickly. Some rishonim learned that a yad, since it's always moving and it's never stationary, then even though it may look stationary, it's considered mitaltel bi'avir. It's always sort of moving through airspace. And therefore, any object that's sitting on in his hand is not considered nachal gabi karka, because it's not on the karka, it's not on the ground, it's floating through midair. The Rashba has another pshat in this sugya. And the Rashba says that the reason why the Gemara thinks that yad, an akiris yad, is not called an akiris chefetz, is because his body is in one rishus, and his yad is extended into a different rishus. So when his guf and the object that's on his back are both in the same rishus, then you could say akiris gufo kakiris chefetz tomi. But when his yad is outstretched into a different rishus, and his body is in a different rishus, so take for the example the case we gave before, the ani is rooted, he's standing in the rishus harabim, his hand is stretched into the rishus hayochid, and the Baal Bais puts an object into his hand, that hand is not considered part of his guf, because the hand is in one rishus, in this case rishus hayochid, whereas his body is in a different rishus, in rishus harabim. But in any event, the Gemara says that there's a difference between yad and guf. So even though we're paskining here, akiras gufo, says Rebbe, is kakiras chefetz domini is chayav. So even though Reuven was the one who picked up the object and put it on Shimon's back, when Shimon moves his body, it's considered that he's oker not only his body, but anything that's attached to his body, but not so in the case of yad. Yad is considered, as we said before, floating in midair. And here we turn to Daf Gimel Amid Beis. Rav Chia was a little bit upset. Rav Chia, you should know, was Rav's uncle. And, you know, sometimes an uncle could make a ha'ara to his nephew. Amalei Rav Chia la Rav. And first he starts with a kind of appellation. He gives him a kavod. He says, Bar Pachti. Rav Kivega has psukim in Tanakh to prove that the word Pachti means gedolim. You are the son of Gdolim, meaning you come from great lineage. And Rav Chia is giving himself a compliment as well, because they were related to each other. Anyway, he says, Lo amina lecha, in a rhetorical question, haven't I told you on many occasions, Kikar Rebbe b'hai mesechta, when Rebbe is learning one mesechta, Lo teshayle b'mesechta akriti, don't ask him in a different mesechta. His head is wrapped around a certain mesechta, don't ask him and confuse him with another mesechta. Why? Dilma lava daite, perhaps he's not holding in that mesechta that you're asking him. Of course, he has to give you an answer, because otherwise he'll be booshed out. So he's going to give you the wrong answer, perhaps, only because he's embarrassed. However, di lav de Rebbe gavur rabahu, if not for the fact that you asked Rebbe, and Rebbe was a great man, and he was so great that he, you know, that he could answer your question. But if he wasn't so great, then kasafte means you embarrassed him. Kisufa is the Aramaic word for busha. Dimashani lach shinuya delav shinuya. He's going to give you an answer that's not really the right answer. It's not precise. But hashda, now mia shapir mashani lach. In this case, Rebbe actually gave you the right answer. As Rav Chia is not telling him that Rebbe, because of embarrassment, gave Rav the wrong answer. He gave him the right answer. But that's only because Rav is such a gavur rabba, and you know somehow Rebbe is a gavur rabba, and somehow Rav got away with it in this case. Now the Gemara answers: how do we know that Rebbe's answer was the right answer? The Sanya we learned in a brisa: Hayaton ochlen umashkim mibod yom. If on erev Shabbos he has food on his back or whatever object he has on his back, votzion mishachashecha, and he started walking out from Rishus HaYochid out to Rishus HaRabim after nightfall. So again, on Erev Shabbos before nightfall, he had the object on his back. But he only moved his body out towards Rishus HaRabim after nightfall. Chayav. Why? Lefisha eino domil liyad. It's not like the case of the yad of the ani that's extended into the Rishus HaYochid of the Balabayis, and the Balabayis puts it in his hand, and the Oni is therefore potter because he didn't do the Akira, because Yad is not Nach. And if Yad is not Nach, it's always considered Metaltel, then the Oni in this case didn't do an Akira. But in the case of Akira's Gufo, that's Kakira's Chefetz. So the Mepharshim asks the following question: does Rebbe need proof from a Braisa? Rebbe's a Tana. But the answer is that Rav Chiya was criticizing Rav for asking a question to Rebbe from a different Masechta. Had he asked this question to Rebbe when Rebbe was learning Masechta Shabbos, then certainly Rebbe would have known about this Braisa, and he would have quoted this Braisa. Because this Braisa already has addressed this question of Akiras Gufo establishing Kakiras Chefetz Tavi. The very fact that Rebbe did not quote this Braisa means that you caught him a little off guard. You know, you asked him a question from a different Masechta. So all the Mepharshim say that in our time you're not allowed to ask a person from a different sugya, even within the same Masechta. Okay, no one caught that joke. But anyway, Omar Abaye says, Pshitali, I understand without a doubt that Yodo Shel Adam Eina Lo Kirshus HaRabim Ve Lo Kirshus HaYochid. Now, what we're saying over here is that if a person is standing in one Rishus and he extends his hand out to a different Rishus, which could go in either direction, then his yad is not considered neither here nor there. And Abai is going to now prove that from our Mishnah. That which I said, that Rishus HaRabim Lo Damya, that his hand is not like a Rishus HaRabim. In other words, if a person is standing in Rishus HaYochid and he extends his hand to Rishus HaRabim, that's not considered Rishus HaRabim. That I'm going to derive mi yodo di ani. Right, the ani is standing out in Rishus HaRabim. He extends his hand into a Rishus HaYochid. He has a full hand. You know, he's holding an object. And the Mishnah says that if the Baal Bais takes the object out of the hands of the ani, both of them are potter. Now, I understand why the ani is potter, because he didn't do the hanocha. It was the Baal Bais who did the hanocha. But on the other hand, maybe the Baal Bais should be chayav. Why? Because the ani's feet are situated out in Rishus HaRabim. If I would consider his hand to be an extension of his body, we would view the hand as Rishus HaRabim. Well, guess what? If that be the case, when the Baal Bais takes the object out of the hand of the ani, he's in effect, and then he puts it down in Rishus HaYochid, and he's in effect implementing an entire Meleches Hotzah. But the answer is that the Yad does not have the status of that Rishus we're extended into. And again, we can flip it around the other way, says Abai. Rishus HaYochid Lo Damya. You don't give the Rishus, the Yad that's extended into another Rishus, the status of a Rishus HaYochid. And that I'll prove to you from Yodot Baal Bais. Right, the Baal Bais is standing firmly rooted in Rishus HaYochid. He extends his hand full of some object out into Rishus HaRabim, and the Baal Bais takes it out of his hand, puts it down, and he's potter. It's not considered as if he did an Akira from Rishus HaYochid, because the Yad is not like the Rishus HaYochid. So again, when the Ani stretches his hand in, we're not going to view the Yad as if it's Rishus HaRabim. When the Baal Bais extends his hand out into the Rishus HaYochid, we're not going to consider the Yad a Rishus HaYochid. So what is the Yad in a case where the Yad is extended into another Rishus? What is its status? It's neither Rishus HaRabim nor Rishus HaYochid. So Boy Abai, Abai says, I have a possibility. Boy means he has a suffix about it. But the first tzad in his suffix is Yodosh Alonim, Maushet Teyosa Kikarmelis. So Rabbeinu said, this is our first occasion since we learned, we started Masechta Shabbos very long ago, about a day ago, right? To discuss a Karbalis. A Karbalis is an area, it's called a yar, it's called a forest, or it could be a wilderness, it could be a body of water. A Karbalis is something that's neither here nor there. The literal translation of the word Karbalis is a yar. Yar means a forest. It's neither here nor there. It's not a Rishus HaYochid. The reason why it's not a Rishus HaYochid is because a Rishus HaYochid has to be mukaf, mechitzos, has to be surrounded with walls, but this Karbalis, this yar, is completely open on all sides. It has no mechitzos. On the other hand, it's not a Rishus HaRabim because it's not noach tashmishte, meaning it's not a place where the Rabim go in there and they enjoy the area. You know, it's not an open area like a marketplace where people come and they buy and they sell and they walk and the highways and so forth and so on. This is a forest. So people don't go into the forest. So that's called a Karmelis. A Karmelis has the following status, and this is all Durabanan. On a Doraisa level, a Karmelis is called a Makom Pitar. Pitar means it's not Chayiv, it's neither here nor there, it's not a Rishus HaYoch, Rishus HaRab. The Rabbanan created a brand new Rishus, a domain which is called a Karmelis. Now, what's the law of the Karmelis? It gets the worst of both. In other words, you cannot carry from a Karmelis out into a Rishus HaRabim. You cannot carry from a Rishus HaRabim into a Karmelis. You cannot carry from a Karmelis into a Rishus HaYochid or from a Rishus HaYochid to a Karmelis. We'll always take the Chumrah and go to the strict side in terms of the flip Rishus. Now, what do we do with a yad? We said that if a man is standing in one rishus and he extends his hand into another rishus, he's got an object in his hand is neither rishus hayachid nor rishus harabim. Should we, says Abai, give the yad the status of a karmelis? Now, watch what happens over here. This person, let's take the case of the ani. Again, the same would be true in the case of the baal bais. The ani extends his hand on Shabbos into a Rishus HaRabim. He's holding on to something. He has already implemented 2/3 of Melechus Hotzah. That was not a nice thing to do. He shouldn't have done that on Shabbos. As we said over and over again, in a case of Zeh Okev Zeh Meniach, each one has violated an Issur D'Rabbanan. So you're not going to give this guy shishi. You know, he's not a good guy. I mean, he held his hand with something in it, and he stretched it out into another rishus. Mi kansu rabbanon. Should the rabbanon implement a knas, a penalty, la dure, preventing him from taking back ligabe, his hand, back to where his body is? Although we shouldn't implement a knas. Now, on the first Sad in Abai's Sofeh, the status of his yad extended out into another Rishus is that of a Karmelis. If we allow him to take his hand back, then he's in effect carrying something from a Karmelis because his hand has the status of a Karmelis, taking it out into Rishus HaRabim. That he's not allowed to do. Oh, lo, should we say this knas maybe is too difficult, too severe? Because keep in mind, Rabbi Osi, if we don't allow him to take his hand back, then he's going to be standing there with his hand extended for, I don't want to say 24 hours, but maybe 23 hours, maybe 22 hours. I don't know. I tried an experiment that I lasted for about an hour. I mean, that was on a good day. But this is a real heavy knas. But on the other hand, guess what? He had no right to take his hand out with an object into another rishus. He violated 2/3 of Melechus Shabbos, and his hand is now a Karmelis. You know, in this suffix of Abaye, we really want to understand why Abaye wants to have Rachmanis on him. What's the tzad to say, oh lo, that we could be compassionate, and we could say that it's not a Karmelis. After all, it is a Karmelis, but Abaye doesn't know if it's a Karmelis. Maybe a Karmelis is only a permanent place, like a yar, like the paradigmic case of a forest. A yad is not, the Rabbanan never went as far as to give the status of a Karmelis to a yad. But nevertheless, we should impose a knas, and we should penalize him. Next time he'll think twice before he stretches his hand out with an object in it. Tashmas, the Gemara quotes a brisa to be poshet this suffix. What's the answer to your question, Abaye? It says, Hoysa yada malea peros, votzia lachutz. He's got fruits in his hand. He extends his hand out from Rishus HaYochin into a Rishus HaRabim. Tani Chad, we have one brisa that says, Osu lach zero. He's not allowed to take his hand back. Tani Hidra, but we have another brisa that says, Mutu lach zero. So what do we do to reconcile this contradiction between two brises? Is he allowed to take his hand back into where his body is? My love, shouldn't we assume the Hakam Miflagi that in truth these two brises are at loggerheads? And what are they debating? Marsov, according to the first brise that says Asulach Zira Ke Karmel Isdamya, that the hand was given the status when it stretched out into another Rishus of a Karmelis, and therefore he's not allowed to bring his hand back. Umar Sover, the other brisa that allows him to bring his hand back, Lav Ki Karmelis Tomi, it does not have the status of a Karmelis, and therefore he's allowed to take his hand back to where he's located. So the Gemara basically at this point wants to say that the suffix of Abaye is vacillating about what is indeed the subject of a machlokas between two brisos. Gemara says, Lo, you don't have to assume that these two brisos are arguing about the suffix, whether Yad is Kikarmel or not Kuli Alma. Both prices agree. Kikarmel is Damya, that the Yad, when it's extended into another Rishus, has the status of a Karmelis, and that itself should be enough to prohibit his taking it back. But Lokasha, Kan Lamata Measara, Kan Lamala Measara. Now, for this, to explain the difference between above or below 10 Tvachim, we have to say a few words about Rishus HaRabim. And this is in contrast to Rishus HaYochid. Rishus HaYochid, once it's Mukaf Mechitzos, it's surrounded by walls, then the Rishus is Ola Adler Akia. From the Rishus, the Karka Rishus HaYochid, you can go up all the way to the heavens, it's all one continuous Rishus HaYochid. But Rishus HaRabim goes up till 10 Tfachim, only from the ground, and in certain cases only from 3 tefachim above the ground. That has to do with a concept called lovud, which we'll get into another time. And up to, but not above, 10 tefachim. So above 10 tefachim in Rishus HaRabim is considered a makom ptar. It's not neither Rishus HaRabim nor Rishus HaYochid. It's a makom ptar. So where did he put his arm? So let's say a man is standing. When a person is standing and he stretches his arm out, we'll call it horizontally in a straight line, like a 90 degree angle. So chances are good, depending on how short or how tall he is, that his hand is above 10 tefachim. So let's say, for example, the Ani, well, let's talk about the Baal Bais. The Baal Bais is standing where? In Rishus HaYochid. He stretches his arm out into Rishus HaRabim, but where is it? Is it above 10 tefachim? Let's say, for example, this table is above 10 tefachim. I don't know, I'm not sure, but let's say. Right, we have to know what a tefach is. For that, you have to learn Masechta Erevin. You have to come to my 9:30 shiur, and then we'll figure out how big a tefach is. But in any event, if you're standing here and your arm is stretched out above 10 tefachim in Rishus HaRabim, guess what? You haven't violated any Iser whatsoever, because the Avia, the airspace in Rishus HaRabim, only goes up to, everybody, 10 Tfachim, above 10 Tfachim, it's a Makom Ptor, it's not a Rishus HaRabim. So in the case of the second Brisa, we'll go backwards. The second Brisa says he's allowed to take his hand back. The answer is because he put his hand, Lamala Me'asara, above 10 Tfachim. He never took the object and entered into Rishus HaRabim, because above 10 Tfachim is not Rishus HaRabim. But the first brisa that says it's Asur, then he really violated, again, as we said before, 2/3 of Melech HaShabbos, because he took his hand Lamata Me'asar Tvachim. And when he moves his hand Lamata Me'asar Tvachim, he's in a Rishus HaRabim. So again, we could really hold that everybody would, both brises would establish that the Yad is a Karmelis, but it depends where the Yad is. If the Yad is below Asar Tfachim, then for sure it's a Karmelis, because we have to make sure he doesn't do such a thing. But if he stretches his arm out above 10 Tfachim, then we're not going to impose upon him any sort of knas and say, well, your Yad has the status of a Karmelis, because he never entered into a Rishus HaRabim, because Rishus HaRabim above 10 Tfachim is not a Rishus HaRabim. Eboy, saying to the Gemara now, offers another way of reconciling these brisos. and it has nothing to do whatsoever with Abaye Safek. Edvid, both Brises are addressing a case where he stretches his arm out lemata me'asora, and both Brises hold that lav kekarmel is dummy, that we're not going to impose a knas and make his yad consider it as a karmelis. Okay, so now we have to answer the following question. So if the yad is not a karmelis, and in that sense lemata me'asora is not a karmelis, so then why do we say he can't bring his hand back? V'lo kasha. Kan mi bodyom, kan mi shechashecha. When did he actually stretch his arm out? So imagine that Shabbos enters at 6 p.m. We'll just artificially take a number. There are two scenarios here. Both are addressed respectively by these two brises. One scenario is where he put his hand out at 1 minute to 6. Now it's 6 o'clock, it's Chashecha, it got dark out, and it's Shabbos. So the Gemara says that's the first case, Kan Mibodyom, when he put his hand out, he stretched his hand out before nightfall. And if it's such a case, he did nothing to deserve a knas, because it was before Shabbos started. But Kan, the first Braisa, which says that we're not going to allow him to take his hand back, he deserves a knas. Why? Misha Chashecha, when did he stretch his arm out? Not 1 minute to six, but 1 minute after six, etc., etc. So Misha Chashecha, if he put his arm out, Misha Chashecha, then we're going to tell him he's not allowed to put his hand back. But Mibodyom, Lo Kansu Rabbanon, the Rabbanon are not going to impose any sort of penalty on someone who did something that is technically mutter. Again, he should have been a little smarter to bring his hand back before Shabbos, but okay, he forgot about it. But he didn't do any violation when he stretched his hand out. That was not a malacha, not even a beginning of a malacha. It was before Shabbos. But Misha Chashecha, when he started a malacha be'isur, and he shouldn't have done so, is then Kansur Rabbanon. And that would apply, even if I assume it's not a karmelis, but still, he did, as we said before, two-thirds of the malacha, and on Shabbos, so he violated that isur. The Gemara says, Adarab, on the contrary, Ipcha Mistabra, the logic would compel us to come to the exact opposite conclusion. There's more of a reason to be compassionate with regard to someone who extended his arm on Shabbos itself. We should be more compassionate. Anybody have a guess? That's counterintuitive. Why should we be more lenient with someone who on Shabbos itself did two-thirds of the malacha? We should consent him. We should impose a knas on him. We should tell him he's not allowed to bring his hand back. What's the Gemara's logic? Anybody guess?
It's just a minute before Shabbos goes out.
Well, what's going to happen if you force him to keep his hand hanging there in the balance, you know, for the rest of Shabbos? At some point, he's going to get a little bit tired. Are you willing to accept that? Mm-hmm. And what's he going to do? He's going to drop the object. Well, guess what? The moment he drops the object, because he put his hand out after nightfall, he now completes Melechah Shabbos. Ifcha Mistabro, let's say the opposite, says the Gemara. Mibodyom, if he put his hand out, so he did the Akira and the Shini Rishus, when it was Mutter, it was before Shabbos. Di Shadilei, Shadilei means if he drops it, if he throws the object down, because you're forcing him to keep his hand out. Lo asili dechi of chakas. In any event, he won't be violating Melechah Shabbos because the Akira was on Erev Shabbos. Is therefore l'knesua rabbanon. If there's any logic to say that we should cancel him because he's kept his hand out in on Shabbos itself and he shouldn't have done so, is then we can impose a knas and we can sleep comfortably in our beds. We don't have to be nervous about the fact that if we cancel him, he'll have to keep his hand out, he might drop the object. Because even in the worst case scenario, if he drops the object, he doesn't violate a chiyuv chatos. But mishachashecha, but if you can impose this knas when he put his hand out after nightfall, the shadilei, if after he gets tired, he drops the object, he can't take it anymore, is asi behuli de chiyuv chatos. He's going to come to violate Shabbos with a full-fledged chiyuv malacha lo l'kinsu rabbanon. The rabbanon shouldn't have imposed the knas in this case. From the fact that the Gemara didn't offer this possibility, tifshot, we should now have an answer to the question of Rav Beiboy Bar Abaye. What does Rav Beiboy Bar Abaye ask? Boy, a suffix of Rav Beiboy Bar Abaye, hidbik pas bitanur, a person on Shabbos, took a dough and he put it into the oven. Rabbi said, what happens if he lets it reach its full baking stage? What malacha does he violate? Anybody know? Malacha safia, otherwise known as bishul. Is he tirul or dosa? Do they allow him to scrape off the dough from the side of the oven? Kodem sheyovel lidei chiyuv chatas, before he violates malacha safia with the chiyuv chatas. Oh, loi tiro. They're not going to allow him. Why wouldn't they allow him? Because on Shabbos you're not allowed to take a dough out of the oven. That's called Rediyas HaPas. In Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll have a whole shiur about Rediyas HaPas. But in Midrabanan, it's called a Chachma Vein Malacha. It's not a Malacha, but Midrabanan, it's Asur. So what do we do in this case? On the one hand, if we say, well, you're not allowed to take the dough out, then he's going to come to violate a full-fledged Malacha Safiyah. On the other hand, if we allow him to take it out, then he violates an Isur Drabanan of Rediyas HaPas. So how do you balance the two? Is Tifsho, we should come to the conclusion and answer Rav Beva's question by saying Deloi Tiru, we're not going to allow him. We have total, you know, we have to insist on our Issa Drabanan, and we're not going to allow, because again, in the case where he stretched his arm out into the other Rishus on Shabbos itself, Mishachashecha, we impose a Knas on him, and we're not concerned with the fact that as a result of this Knas and a violation of the Drabanan, he may drop the object and violate a chiyuv malach of chatos. We're not going to be concerned with that. So we don't have to be concerned with the fact that by leaving the dough in the oven, he's going to violate malach safia. So Gemara says, "Halo kashav etivsho." That doesn't bother me. Now we have an answer to the question that was raised by Rabbi. That's fine. The Gemara has another approach and a few other approaches that you can't really come to any conclusion. If a low kasha, there's no question. Kan b'shogeg v'kan b'mezid. The case of the brisa which says you're not allowed to bring his hand back, that was a case of a mezid. And b'shogeg lo kansur abona b'mezid kansur abona. So it means the following, that although in the brisa was saying that we're not going to allow him to take his hand back, and we're being very machmir on him, that's because he was amazing and he deserves a knas. He's worthy of a knas. In the case of a shogeg, in the other brisa, he's not worthy of a knas. Eboy, same, another way of reconciling these brisos, idi v'idi b'shogeg. Both cases, when he stretched his hand out, it was b'shogeg. But hacha, what's the machlokas between the two brises? Bekansu shogeg atu mezid kamifligi. When we want to impose a knas in a penalty in the case of somebody who deliberately violates the Torah, should we extend that knas even to include a case of somebody who's a shogeg? Marisa, we're going to one brise of the first brisa. Kansu shogeg atu mezid. Once we start with mezid, we have to protect and extend that knas and include even a shogeg. Umar Sava, the second brisa, is of the opinion lo kansu shogeg atu mezid. And this issue about kansu shogeg atu mezid is a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Masechta Gittin on Daf Nun Gimel Amid Beis. E boy same liolam lo kansu. We're not going to make a knas in the case of a shogeg because of a mezid. The low kasha, there's no stira, there's no contradiction between the two brises. Kan li osa chotzer. And here we turn to the Avdalid Omid Aleph, kan li chotzer acheres. In one case, the brisa that says you're not allowed to bring your hand back, that was a case where he wanted to take something out of his chotzer. He stretched his hand out into a different chotzer, and we're not going to allow him to bring his hand back to a different chotzer. But in a case where he wants to bring his hand back to the same chutzah that he began with, that we're going to allow. Kidaboy mine rav hami rav nachmin hoise yodam alea peros votzi alachutz. The man had a hand full of peros and he stretched it outside to Rishus HaRabim. And Rav asked Rav Nachman, Maulach zero la'osa chotzer, can he bring his hand back to the same chotzer? Amalei mut, he says he's allowed to. But l'chotzer acheres mao, can he put it into a different chotzer? Amalei Rav Nachman said it's asur, maishna. So what's the difference? So he joked with him. He says, L'chaytechol alei kur de milcha, when you're able to measure out a whole kur's worth of salt, that's, come back and I'll give you an answer. But in any event, he gave him an answer, and he said, Hasam lo is avde machshavto, hocha is avde machshavto. He wanted to get rid of this object from his chatzer. And if you allow him to bring his hand back to the same chatzer, then that's called niskaima. I'm sorry. If you're only going to allow him to bring him back to his own chatzer, lowest avdei machshavto, he didn't complete and fulfill his mission, he didn't accomplish his goal. But on the other hand, if you allow him to put it into another's chatzer, Yerim's chatzer, then he would have, is avdei machshavto, he would have completed his mission of taking the object out of his chatzer and clearing his chatzer, that object. And therefore, we're not going to allow him to do so, because next time he's going to do it again. You're encouraging him to repeat the same aver. So here we stop here on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, and we're up to Gufa. And if anybody has any questions, now's a good time. I just want to announce that tomorrow, for those who are outside of Yerushalayim, is Purim, as you know. I'm included in that because I'm not going to be in Yerushalayim for Purim. I'm with my children, my grandchildren. So we'll have we'll have a shiur maybe from someone else, maybe one of the members of the Kollel. I'll see if we can arrange that. Or if anybody wants, they could hear my shiur. I'll make it accessible to you. Just have to give me your email address or your WhatsApp address or something along that line. Okay, man. Everyone should have a Freilich and Purim.
Purim, there's a shiur.
Purim again. We'll try to. I'll get back to you. I don't know. I'm not going to be here on Purim until the Suda in the afternoon.
We'll be tomorrow or Purim.
Right. So I'll be back on Thursday, and on Thursday, Mirz Shem will be up to what? Dalet Hey Vav. So we'll have Daf Vav is a big one. That's the four Rishuyos of Shabbos: Shusha Rav, Shusha Yochid, and a Mokka and Mokum Tur and a Karmus.
If I understand this correctly, the rabbis are more concerned about transgressing an avera of the Rabbanim than they are of
correct.
If they had a choice, they'd rather to an avera which is derisa rather than a derisa.
Correct.
How is that?
Because otherwise the Rabbanim will not have teeth to them, so they have to insist you can't do it. Now, in the case of the Doraisa, he's only going to be violating the Doraisa B'shogeg.
Not if he sticks in the oven and it bakes.
Right, right. So shogeg means that he can't tolerate holding his hand out, so it becomes so heavy for him that he drops the object. That's not a chiyuv kapis.
The
case of the oven is the sugya tomorrow. We're going to come to the conclusion that if he doesn't take the pas out, he will violate a chiyuv chatas. But rediyas pas is an iser melacha derabanan. There are two types of gzeiras derabanan. One is only gzeira, one is a melacha derabanan.